You're listening to Halford and Brough.
The air is thick with anticipation. People are unclear exactly what's going to happen next, but they're very excited. There's a lot of nerves as well, and there's some fear.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Oh, I'm not the kind of magician who does tricks. I'm a mathemagician. Now, prepare to marvel at the mysteries of the universe as I make this remainder disappear.
Dranz has just got some Vaseline there. He's like, this is awesome, right?
Nerd!
But,
well, can't get it out of that.
Good morning, Vancouver. It's Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650. Yeah, this is Jason talking. Jason doesn't normally say good morning. Well, I'm going to say good morning to Dom, nephew Dom, producer first. Good morning, Dom.
Good morning.
So Mike Halford's been fired.
Has that been confirmed? Can we?
Yeah. No.
Is our source good on that?
Okay, so we are living in unusual times. Mike woke up this morning and wasn't feeling great. So I think this is the first time I get to use this for something personal. Out of an abundance of caution, Mike is going to sit out the show today. He's going to get tested, obviously, for COVID. He might as well get everything tested, you know?
Yeah.
He's going for a big test.
Sure, why not?
Never know what he's got, what he's picked up.
I can't believe you never...
He lives in Burnaby, so you might have picked up some stuff.
Fair enough. But I can't believe you never used out of an abundance of caution before.
But for my show.
For our show, right?
An abundance of... I mean, I've read it in statements many times.
I get that, but I feel like that's the go-to excuse now in 2020 and 2021.
Are you saying it's an excuse that Mike is just like, I don't really feel like doing the show today.
Perhaps. But I'm just saying, like, if you ever wanted to get out of anything in the past year, it's the go-to because
totally.
No one can tell you otherwise.
Mm. Like, so anyway, it's just me and Dom today. So Dom might have to talk a little bit more because I might run out of stuff to say. Or I might just freeze up.
Let's hope not.
You never know without Mike Halford here. We do have a busy show. We've moved some guests around, so we do have some more guests. I'll be reading lots of text messages, too, into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. I'm going to need your help, too, the listener help. So any text you want to say, send them in. 650-650. It is the Dunbar Lumber text line, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. I might just read that read over and over for 3 hours.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us in just a few minutes, actually. 5 minutes. Wish will be on. And we'll talk about everything going on in the NHL. The trade deadline is Monday, and yet... I feel like in Vancouver, are we even talking about the trade deadline much? It's just been overtaken by this COVID situation with the Canucks. Yet another player added to the list yesterday. I guess welcome to the club, Nate Schmidt. The Canucks did release a statement yesterday, and they confirmed that they are dealing with a variant. Very confusing issue there. And if you've been on Twitter, people have found a way to argue about it endlessly. It is confirmed as a variant. I know Dr. Bonnie Henry said she didn't know anything about that a couple days ago. I don't know what the story there is. But regardless, it's a serious outbreak. And I was reading Ian McIntyre's piece yesterday. And Ian is going to join us at 8 o'clock to talk about that piece. And he goes, Brock Besser, JT Miller, Jimmy Vesey, and Jordy Benn are the only players from the 22 listed on Vancouver's NHL roster at the time the team was shut down who are not in COVID protocol. Some of them had injuries, I guess. I don't know, what they're considering Tanner Pearson right now, because he's one of the guys that could be traded, theoretically, if they don't come to a contract extension with him. So he's not, if I go to the injury lists for the Canucks, he's not on the COVID protocol. He's out with a lower body injury. But regardless, it's a mess in Vancouver. So we'll talk to Wish about that. But there was a pretty big trade in the NHL yesterday. Of course, it came down in the States where things are a little bit different. The New York Islanders kind of loading up. Kyle Palmieri, Travis Zajac going from the Devils to the Islanders. Of course, the Islanders GM is Lou Lamoriello, so he'll know Travis Zajac. So Wish is a big Devils fan, so we'll talk to him about that trade and how everything is shaping up. There is more and more talk, especially up in Canada, that the playoffs might have to start in a bubble. Talk to Wish about that. It's the first round of the Masters today as well. I love this tournament. It's not my favorite golf tournament. That is still the Open, or the British Open, as some people call it. Adam Stanley from Next Rounds on Me podcast will join us. Adam's a golf writer. I think he recently spoke to Mike Weir on his podcast, and Mike Weir is one of the three Canadians teeing it up at Augusta. Mike Weir, Mackenzie Hughes, and the guy who has a chance to win, Corey Connors. So we'll talk to Adam Stanley about the Masters. Tiger's not there. Can Dustin Johnson repeat? And that'd be kind of an unusual repeat champion there. He won it in November, then he could win it in April. Jordan Spieth is back. Jordan Spieth was down for a long time, a few years where his game just left him. He won last week in Texas. Now he's going to try and win at a place where he's always already had success. Lots of stories at Augusta, and I think this course is going to play pretty tough. It's windy. The greens are firm. So there could be some interesting scores out there. Adam Stanley will join us at 6:30, and then we're going to have Kevin Woodley drop in at around 7:20. Talk about some of the goaltending situations in the league. And we'll also, we don't just have to talk goaltending with Kev. We can talk about this Canucks situation. Whether or not they're going to play more games. Whether or not they should. Whether or not it's worthwhile. I was reading a piece from Patrick Johnston in The Province. And he's been told that the Canucks are going to try to get this season done. I don't know. I get why the Canucks would try and get the season done. They've got deals with broadcasters, you know, Sportsnet here, Sportsnet 650. They got deals with them. They got deals with sponsors, and those sponsors are going to say, well, we signed up for a whole season. So if we don't get all the games in, then we're going to need some make goods on next season. So that takes out of next season's revenue. So I understand why they might do it. I was actually thinking last night, I was like, I wonder if they might play those four games against the Ottawa Senators and have those as the last four games of the season. They could play those while the playoffs are on. Would it be super weird and like kind of useless? Yes, it would. But it would get those games done. So it's an interesting situation with the Canucks and the NHL. And joining us now, Greg Wyshynski, our friend Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Wish, how are you doing, buddy? I'm all by myself. Well, unless you count our producer, Dom. Halford is woke up this morning and wasn't feeling well. So out of an abundance of caution, no Mike Halford this morning, just me. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I know why I'm on, and I hope that Mike's feeling okay, but I got that Johnson & Johnson going in my arm yesterday, and I'm feeling great. I've got the Super Mario star, baby. I'm running around New York. I'm licking poles in the subway. That's how inoculated I am.
You're licking poles? I'm sure we'll be able to take that audio clip and play it many times.
I heard you on the Vancouver the Canucks thing. I didn't really consider the money. That's a really good point. And I wonder if the NHL made the decision to like cut the season short, whether or not maybe they could kick some dough to the Canucks and say, hey, here's your make good on the money that, mm-hmm. you know, you're losing from your sponsorships and everything else, because after all, we are making the decision to cut your season short. But the economic part of this is a huge thing. Obviously, it's the reason that we restarted the season and did the bubble and the whole thing last summer. And I don't think that's necessarily been talked about enough in the context of should the Canucks finish the season.
Do you think they will finish the season?
Yeah, I think they're going to figure out a way to do it. It may not be palatable. I think we might transfer our anger from you know, COVID protocols and all this other stuff to the concerns about a team playing, you know, four nights in a row or something. I mean, I think it's possible that it could be the case. Mm-hmm. But I think the really interesting thing is that everyone knew that this was a possibility. The NHL had contingency plans in place, obviously, with the time built in after the season was supposed to end to make up games. But also the players were cognizant of it. I talked to a player before the season for one of our sort of COVID frequently asked questions pieces on ESPN. And he said that you go into every game knowing that there's a chance the season could be resolved by points percentage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that you may not necessarily have the real estate you think you have during the season to make up ground or to do X, Y, Z. And so everyone's sort of in the back of their mind knew this was a possibility. And so I think it really just comes down to a number situation. I mean, it depends on when they come back, and it depends on how deep the NHL wants to go beyond its stopping point, knowing that it's going to be time in which playoff teams are sitting on their hands.
Wish, have all the players playing for American teams been vaccinated?
Hell no.
No, like I mean, you're saying that you got yours up in Canada. We've been a little slower than you guys with our vaccinations. Mm-hmm. What is the process down there? Like, if you've been vaccinated, when do we expect all the players down in the States to be vaccinated?
Well, there's two different answers there. The first is that in a lot of places, in New York was one of them, it just opened up to people that don't have underlying conditions. Okay. Or frontline workers, or they're of a certain age. Like, it just opened up to somebody like me, like last week. And so it took a lot of, you know, refreshing the website and being nimble with your fingers. It was very much like trying on tickets, you know, which ironically is the case, because where they're doing the vaccinations is where they hold New York Comic Con. So that was surreal yesterday. You know, the first answer is that it's just starting to kind of become available for a lot of people that would be eligible and that play in the National Hockey League. The second thing is that when you say all the players, it's not mandatory. I mean, you know, maybe it is for some teams internally. They're not really kind of, you know, speaking out and saying that's the case. But I mean, there's a ton of these guys that aren't going to get vaccinated because they don't believe in it. And they don't feel it necessary. I mean, let me actually categorize that in two different ways. You obviously have a lot of people that are probably COVID truthers who don't believe that there's any need to get a vaccine. Maybe they're anti-vax. I mean, there is certainly that element within the National Hockey League, mm-hmm. based on what we know about the politics and about a lot of these guys.
Sure. Yeah.
And then the other category might be, and this has been something I've talked to a lot about with epidemiologists and also the players themselves. There's going to be a segment of these guys that just feel like they don't need it because they're invincible. I mean, the Vancouver thing happening right now is the first time where we've really heard a lot about how this has wrecked these guys, you know, yeah, how bad they
for
feel
sure.
and how their families are being put at risk and all this other stuff. Like almost every other team that's been impacted by COVID on a massive scale, we've not heard it. And a lot of the guys just came back. Like, it's been no big deal. Now, we've heard, you know, ancillary stuff about the long tail of this virus and how guys are fatigued and it took them a while to come back and they still feel the after effects. But that's all kind of anecdotal stuff. I think a lot of these guys feel like they don't need the vaccine because they feel like they're young and they're in good shape and it's not going to hurt them in the same way it would hurt somebody else.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, that's been the case with most of the guys that have got it. Right.
Yeah.
So they probably talked to their colleagues in the league or their teammates. How did you feel? Felt like I didn't feel great, but I got through it, and I'm fine now. So, you know,
it's not undercutting the importance of the virus and the importance of vigilance and the importance of getting vaccinated to say that this thing hits people in different ways.
Yes.
It's just a fact, you know, and if you're young and you're in shape and you've taken care of your body and you don't have any underlying conditions, ask any doctor. Most of these guys recover and most of them are going to be fine. Now, the problem is that this virus is like a roulette wheel. You know, occasionally your number is going to come up. And the guy I think of is Anton Khudobin from the Dallas Stars, who got it and was like laid up for 2 months. And I mean, you know, he's a little bit of an older player, but by no means is he ancient. And and Marco Rossi from the Wild, that's another guy, like young rookie, like got it and was, you know, knocked out of the league for a year. So there is an aspect of most of the people that get it that are young and in shape and playing in this league recover with no difficulty. But there's definitely those times where something's going on internally and the virus hits them a certain way and they're devastated by it.
It's Alfred and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. We're chatting with Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Wish, I'm trying to think about how the playoffs are going to look. There's talk up in Canada of doing another bubble. Meanwhile, I'm also wondering at the same time if the Stanley Cup final has two American teams in it, could we have full buildings down in the States? Like that's kind of where I'm, that's how far it ranges from a bubble in Canada to maybe sold out buildings in the States. What are you hearing?
Yeah, how the worm has turned, right? Jeez, for like the majority of the season, Canada has been a COVID utopia.
Well, that's why we had the bubble here last year. That's why we were able to have the bubble here. But that's, you know, that's the way things have turned out, and the NHL has just got to deal with it.
The last time I talked to somebody in the league, it was an all options are on the table thing when it comes to Canada, and specifically when it comes to whatever Canadian team emerges from the North Division to be in the Final Four. Mm-hmm. Like they're doing what they did with the bubble, which is to not make any decisions now, try to ride it through as far as they can, and then adjust accordingly when we get closer to it. Now, granted, they've got to start laying the groundwork for some of this stuff, you know, before we get to the conference finals, obviously. But right now, I think they're just waiting to see where the numbers go and everything like that. But to your point, I wonder if it's going to just be a situational thing when it comes to capacity in the playoffs. I mean, you know, obviously, if the Tampa Bay Lightning go on a run, they could very well have a full building. Mm-hmm. They could have it now, I think, in Florida. So, you know, a place like that obviously is different than if the Islanders go on a run. And here in New York, it's a bit different of a capacity issue. So I think it's going to be case by case. I think it's going to be situational, but it is within the realm of possibility that you're going to have two teams play for the Stanley Cup. One team can have 25% capacity and one team has standing room only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just thought about the conference finals as far as the border situation, because the border still isn't open. Has there been any talk of, let's say, I don't want to say Toronto, so let's say Montreal is in the conference final, and because they beat the Leafs in the first round, and very disappointing result for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Goaltending was an issue. So Montreal gets to the conference final, and they're playing, obviously, an American team. Let's say the border isn't open by then. What do they do?
I mean, the talk has been, you know, not only from various reporting sources, but also conversations I've had, the talk has been that you might have to move them to the States for the final two rounds of the playoffs, which obviously stinks and puts them at a disadvantage and all that. But I mean, there's no other way around it if you can't have teams coming in out of Canada. So it's, like I said, I think all options are on the table right now. I hesitate to say anything is going to happen. I think you know, obviously everybody in Canada knows where the numbers are in that country, but we also just saw the quarantine, you know, get cut by half within the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to really say where it's going to be when we have to start really worrying about this. But they obviously have a number of contingency plans on the table, and they know they have to, because, I mean, it is definite there's going to be a Canadian team in the Final Four.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to figure out something travel-wise and geographically to satisfy that.
Halford and Bruff Show, Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Big trade yesterday between your Devils and the New York Islanders, Travis Zajac and Kyle Palmieri. go to the Islanders. What'd you think of the trade?
Well, from a Devils perspective, I wasn't crazy about it. I think if you retain 50% of the salary on two players, you should probably get something better than a first rounder that's going to be maybe 25 to 31. Mm-hmm. And then in a really weak draft where nobody's seen the players to be able to scout them. And then a conditional fourth round pick, and the condition being that the Islanders have to make the Stanley Cup final for it to become a third. So I feel like they didn't get all the value back they probably should have out of this deal. Now, that said, a lot of it is marketplace. A lot of it is trying to do right by your players. I mean, I think in Palmieri's case, you know, he's really close with Tom Fitzgerald, the general manager. I think Fitz probably wanted to do him a solid and keep him within the metropolitan area, and put him on a team that he knew was going to be a playoff team. Same thing goes with Zajac. I mean, Zajac, you know, had to waive his no trade clause for this. And obviously he's only going to do it for certain situations being, you know, that he's been entrenched in New Jersey for over, you know, a decade and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the marketplace for this trade was a little bit different than it would be for other trades. But at the end of the day, I think the Islanders got one of the most coveted wingers at the trade deadline, maybe the most, if you're not buying what Taylor Hall's selling anymore. And they got a serviceable bottom six center with a ton of experience and a really good guy in the room for not a lot. And I think if you're Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders, you have to be pretty happy about that.
You mentioned Taylor Hall there. As a Devils fan, you saw up close how important he was to the Devils a few years ago when he won the Hart Trophy, helped the Devils to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then he goes to Buffalo this year on a one-year deal, and it's been a disaster. Can he regain, you know, what, 80% of that level that he was at in New Jersey? Or what's happened to Taylor Hall? Has he just been Buffaloed, or is there or is there something about Taylor Hall, too, that he, I don't know, has he gotten older, is less motivated? It's two goals in, what, 37 games? It's insane.
Yeah. Well, I just think he played the best hockey of his life, you know, for a month, and won the Hart Trophy, and we'll never get that back. I mean, I watched a lot of those games, and you know how, like, when Connor's on the ice and Connor does something every time he's on the ice, that was Taylor Hall that year. Like, he was that good, and on both ends of the ice. I mean, he was just on a complete different level than you've ever seen him before and have ever seen him since. I think the perfect spot for him is a place like Colorado. And I'll tell you why. So there's three places I think of with Taylor Hall. I think of Colorado, I think of Toronto, and I think of Boston. Mm-hmm. I think if he goes to Boston, the spotlight will be the most intense because they have tried a parade of people in that role on the left side of David Krejci. And, you know, you got your Rick Nash, you got
Rick
your
Nash, like that,
Jake DeBrusk, you got your Andre Kasha. You're like, it is a cursed position.
It's crazy how they've remained a good team and they've been a one line team.
Right, exactly. So I think if he goes there, the spotlight will be very intense, and if he doesn't perform well, he's going to become a pariah pretty quickly. I think in Toronto, the interesting thing is that he could fit in and share the spotlight with some other people, but I guarantee you that if, like, things go sideways for the Leafs, the first person they're going to blame is Taylor Hall. So you don't want to go there either. I think Colorado is the spot. And they obviously had some flirtation with Hall when he was a free agent this past offseason. I think he slots in perfectly with Nazem Kadri. I think that's a team where there is pressure to excel and succeed, but they're not quite on the level of, well, we've got to do this within the next 2 years or we are going to have to break up this team kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think he can just kind of slide in there and be in the right market and be on the right team and be in the right support system and really, really thrive in the role that he'd be cast in. If I was Taylor Hall, I'd be begging for a trade to Colorado right now.
Well, wish the trade deadline's on Monday, and we'll talk to you a week from today to look back and then look forward to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I really, really, really anticipate breaking down all four trades that will go down on Monday. It's going to be fantastic. dying to see where Alex Goligoski ends up, Jason.
Can Jordy Benn be the difference for the Montreal Canadiens? And the sixth round pick that Vancouver got is, you know, they might.
Oh, if I may, check out my column today on ESPN.com. I actually took 10 trades over the last 5 years, 10 huge deadline trades, and regraded them. I looked back at our grades for them and then regraded them. And Boy, let me tell you, that Andre Kasha trade did not age well for the Boston Bruins. My God.
There's another guy. All right, Wish. Yeah. Talk later, buddy. Thanks. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. NHL trade deadline coverage is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com. Dwayne, the Bucks fan, texted in. Are we going to talk Masters at all today, or are we doing Tanner Pearson contract rumors again? Dwayne, come on, buddy. It's me. I'm by myself. Mike Halford, not here today. Don't be alarmed if you're just joining the show. He woke up this morning. He wasn't feeling well, and out of an abundance of caution, he's going to go get tested, and we're going to see where we're at. Of course we're going to do Masters. I love the Masters. I'm already looking at the group. The TVs are on in the studio. I'm looking at the groups. Corey Connors is going to tee off soon, unless he's already teed off. I think he might have already started. Our poll question today, actually. How much of the Masters do you plan to watch? Three options. As much as I can. That's the one I voted for. I'll watch Sunday or none at all. This is very disappointing, people. 59% of you are saying none. 23% are saying as much as I can. And around 18% of you are saying I'll watch Sunday. What else are you going to do this weekend? I mean, I suppose you could go outside and enjoy your lives. But it's the Masters. Corey Connors has a chance. Not a great chance, but he has a chance. And we'll talk to about the Masters with Adam Stanley from Next Rounds on Me. That's actually a pretty good name for a podcast, a golf podcast. Adam Stanley coming up next. Talk Masters. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're going to do a little Masters talk coming up now. Corey Connors is out on the course now. I believe he's bogeyed his first hole at Augusta, so a tough start for the Canadian. Mike Weir and Mackenzie Hughes also in the field. No Tiger Woods. Can Dustin Johnson repeat? He already won in November. Can he repeat in April? Jordan Spieth is back, playing well again. All right, I can't do this anymore, Dom. You got to talk.
Yeah, your Jim Nance isn't... it's not a 10 out of 10.
No, that was just me. I'm not trying to be Jim Nance. What are you talking about? I would have said, hello, friends.
Okay, fair enough. But he's the voice, is he not?
No, I know. I am. I was just hurt by your comment. It is the Masters. It's Masters Thursday. It's our poll question today. How much of the Masters are you going to watch? As much as you can. Maybe you'll watch just Sunday or none at all. Most of you are saying none, which is very disappointing because I was looking forward to talking golf today. We're going to talk it anyway. Adam Stanley, golf writer, golf podcast guy, Next Rounds on Me. Adam, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, friends.
Yeah, my Nance wasn't...
I had to slide it in.
My Nance wasn't great. I kind of did it on the spot. I heard the music, and I didn't know the music was coming. And it was either do a really bad Jim Nance impression or fall asleep on the couch, like I usually do when I hear that music. This Masters, there's a lot of storylines, but I guess we should start with no Tiger Woods after his car accident recently, and then the report came out, I guess yesterday, or was it the day before, that the sole cause of the crash, according to the authorities, was speed. He was going way too fast, almost double the speed limit. But what does the Masters lose when Tiger Woods isn't there?
It's interesting because almost every other golf tournament without Tiger Woods in the field loses the it factor, loses the Tiger Woods needle moving bump. But the Masters is able to kind of hold its own. And you had said a couple minutes ago about sort of the laundry list of storylines that we have this year. And, you know, the constant every year with the Masters is that people tune in just to watch Augusta National, just to see the golf course. You know, the players kind of play a supporting role to, you know, just how beautiful the place is, how special the place is, just how unique the whole tournament is in so far as it's, you know, a spot that everybody knows, you know, the holes on TV and there's all the back nine drama on Sunday and et cetera, et cetera. So while the tournament loses, you know, a giant like Tiger Woods, unlike every other tournament on the PGA Tour, the Masters is still the thing that, you know, people are going to tune into. They're going to watch it with or without Tiger Woods.
I love how it's back to being in April too, because it was just part of the calendar. And, you know, up in Canada for us, it's the first round of the Masters, usually coincides around the same time as the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we're not going to have the Stanley Cup playoffs until May this year, but it feels like the calendar is kind of getting back to normal with regards to golf. Looking at the storylines, in addition to Tiger Woods, is Dustin Johnson your favorite, or is there some other guy that you like?
Yeah, I mean, golf is such a what have you done for me lately kind of game that, you know, Dustin Johnson hasn't played all that awesome to start this year. You know, certainly you look at his body of work over the last 12 months and it is amazing. He's world number one for a reason. You know, of course, he won the Masters just 5 months ago. Augusta National is playing totally different, and I would argue opposite of the way that it played in November when he did win. But his game is still, you know, really built nicely for this golf course. You know, he's got five straight top tens at the Masters, and that's playing the golf course in all kinds of different conditions. And then, of course, at a different time of the year last year. So Dustin is definitely one of the top contenders. Is he the favorite? No, I would have to say Jordan Spieth is probably the favorite. Just because of the way that he's played so far this year, so far this calendar year. And then certainly he's coming into Augusta off the win in Texas last week, his first win on the PGA Tour in almost 4 years. And this is a guy that, you know, had the scoring record at Augusta National for a number of years. His first three times around there, he finished tied for second, and then he won, and then he finished tied for second again. So the combination of comfort and form makes Jordan Spieth, I believe, the favorite this week.
What happened to Jordan Spieth that he needed to come back? And I mean, where people are calling this a comeback right now.
Yeah. I mean, golf happened. Would probably be the easiest way to describe it. But yeah. You're right. I mean, he dropped, I think it was, he was number one in the world. He dropped to like 92nd, I think, in the world a couple years ago. So it was a pretty significant, you know, drop. And those world rankings are just based on, like I said before about DJ, you know, a body of work. They are a point tally that come in week out. And to go from number one to almost 100 in a matter of 18 months or so was pretty jarring. You know, he did get married, so I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you have to adjust to off the golf course, new routines, etc. But he did tell Golf Channel, you know, about a month or so ago, and he had never said this before, but he had had some bone spurs, some injuries in his wrist, and he had never told that to anybody. So there was some adjustments that needed to be made with his swing, with his action, with his follow through to compensate for that wrist injury. So now, obviously, he appears to be at 100%, very settled, you know, off the golf course as well, and just the ultimate in sports cliches. What is, you know, we're sticking to the process, certainly in golf. And Spieth did just that. He kept the same coach, he kept the same caddy, kept the whole team around him, just kept working and working and working. And now it seems to have turned around in his favor.
What's going to be more important this week? Because I'm hearing the greens are running pretty fast, the course is firm, or the greens are firm. Is it going to be a power game, or is it going to be a guy with touch around the greens?
It's going to be a second shot kind of guy and somebody who's got creativity. Obviously, the long hitters are going to be even longer because the ball's going to be running out so much more. But the short hitters will have a bit more of an advantage as well because their short knocks won't be as short relative to everybody else. But the key thing is going to be ball striking, and the key thing is going to be creativity around the green. The slopes around the greens are absolutely ripping. Guys are probably going to use putters from off the green a lot more. They're going to use the angles. They're going to bump and run. They're going to have to really lean into their creativity and their experience. So, somebody who's a good ball striker, someone who's creative, somebody who's been around that golf course a lot, I think is going to end up being the one who wins this week.
What kind of name pops to mind when you say those things? I mean, I think about, for ball striking, I think about a guy like Morikawa, but I don't know if he's got the putter. Sergio has been around. He's a pretty good ball striker. What kind of names pop to mind for you there?
Yeah, I mean, Colin Morikawa is number one on tour in strokes gained, tee to green. His ball striking is the top of the world class, but he is, I think it's 180th in putting, strokes gained putting on tour this year. So tough look for him. So Justin Thomas for sure is kind of the guy that I've been picking this week. I mean, you look at Justin Thomas and the way that he approaches the game, hits it very far for a guy who's pretty slight in stature. His iron play is tremendous, top 15 on tour in most of the key categories. His putting has improved tremendously over the last number of years. He's coming in to this week, of course, off the win at the Players' Championship just last month. And this is a dude who has improved at Augusta National every single time he's teed it up. He's gone from, 30th to 20th to 15th to 12th to 4th, I believe, in November. He surrounded himself during practice days with some experienced guys. He usually plays with Tiger Woods, usually plays with Fred Couples. So you combine sort of that experience, the momentum from winning the Players, and the last 5 years of continual improvements at Augusta National. And I think Justin Thomas is kind of the unignorable guy for this week in terms of who I think will probably win the green jacket.
Yeah, he's my pick. I was going through a Masters pool yesterday. Dan Riccio from our station has a Masters pool, and I was making my picks, and you had to make 8 picks. And, man, I actually did way too much research. I was learning about how John Rahm is a new father, and I'm like, how much sleep did he get on his way over? Like, is he going to be inspired by that or too tired by that? Justin Thomas was just an obvious pick for me. I wanted to pick one Canadian, and I picked Corey Connors. For me, that was just the obvious pick. Mike Weir is also in the field, but he would be some sort of Cinderella to pull it off. Mackenzie Hughes just hasn't been playing as well as Corey Connors. He had that good run that got him into the Tour Championship, Mackenzie Hughes. But Corey Connors, is he the guy with the best chance, and what chance does he really have to win?
Yeah, and hopefully the winner of that Masters pool wins an espresso machine from Dan. But I think the reason why Corey is playing so well is the exact same reason, or has a good chance at the Masters, is for the exact same reason as Justin Thomas. I mean, this guy's ball striking is some of the best in the world. His comfort level at Augusta National has improved significantly. Corey's told me repeatedly, like, man, there's no hole at Augusta National that scares me. I work the ball right to left. I got a lot of comfort there. I keep learning every single time I'm around that place. So I feel good about myself at Augusta National. So I like that a lot. And this is a guy whose putting was horrific, and he'll be the first person to tell you that. 200th on tour a couple years ago, but he's moved all the way up to 75th on tour so far this season. So a lot of hard work. He switched to left hand low, and I think that's definitely going to be something to watch this week. Now, as I say that, I did see that Corey made a bogey on the first hole, and he missed a putt from like 9 feet. So it's still Augusta National. You still have to be top of your game. So he'll probably, have to dig himself out of a bit of a rut there, making a bogey on one. But out of the three Canadian guys, I would agree, Corey's probably got the best chance of all of them to make a little noise this week.
Well, Adam, you're going to have to come back on the show another time, because there's a bunch of topics that we didn't have time to get into. No majors for Rory. since 2014. I actually had him on my list. I had him on my list, and then I was like, nope. 2000. It's a long time for Rory McIlroy. Poor Westwood. He's one of my favorites, and you know, he's played well in the last month or so, but I don't know if he's ever going to win a major. Probably not. But maybe we'll chat about all that another time. Enjoy the tournament, Adam, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
The Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Just Jason Brough today. Mike Halford, out of an abundance of caution, was staying home today. He woke up, wasn't feeling well. He saw what happened with the Canucks, and he's like, hey, you know what? I think I'll play it safe here. Better safe than sorry. So Mike is probably still asleep right now. He's like, I'm going to go back to bed. Brough will be fine. He's got Dom and the Masters. We do have some texts in. Brough, you sound a bit lonely. Another one. This is Dom's time to step up. Yeah. Is
no.
it though? You think you'll step up today?
I'm just a producer.
That's it?
I'm not here to talk on the mic.
You don't want to be a star in this business? Just you know.
Star producer.
Star producer. Okay. There you go. All right, good. We do have some texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Someone texted in and said, I put a buck on Mike Weir to win. It returns $1,500.
That's like Leicester City winning the Premier League.
There have been some old guys that have taken runs at majors. Bernhard Langer, who is my hero because he's still a good golfer at 63. 63 years old, still winning tournaments on the Champions Tour, and also occasionally in contention in majors. But I think it's pretty unlikely.
Would you consider Ernie Els a old man that won a title recently? Yeah.
When did he win? Not a major.
I thought he won. Hold on. Let me. Look
not a major.
This.
What are you looking at? See this, Dom, this was your time to step up. But we won't just talk golf today. I guess at some point we're going to have to mention Jack Campbell. Did any of you guys hear about this guy? He's apparently a goalie for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know if you're on Twitter at all. He got a few mentions after winning his 10th straight start for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It is a great story, to be fair. And we'll talk to Kevin Woodley about Jack Campbell in about 25 minutes. Dom, yes?
Ernie Els won the Open in 2012. He was 42 years old.
Oh, okay. Right.
So would you consider that an old man winning a title?
No.
Oh, no?
No.
Really?
No. I'm talking about over 50s.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which I don't think has ever been done majors.
Yeah, I don't think.
Unless Jack Nicklaus won the Masters when he was 46, I believe. But some other guys have been in the mix. Tom Watson, at one point a few years ago, was in the mix for a major. So, this Jack Campbell guy. The Leafs won again last night. 10 straight for Jack Campbell. Do we have audio of Jack Campbell?
Yeah.
So is this now the storyline that, like, we'll grudgingly have to accept that it's a pretty good storyline, but it's also going to start to annoy us, and the Toronto media is going to go overboard, and they're going to start, you know, just turning this guy into this amazing myth, et cetera, et cetera. And we're all going to be a little bit tired of it. So the Leafs win again. Jack Campbell is 10th straight win. A goaltending, I think we should look at it as a real goaltending controversy in Toronto now, especially if Frederik Andersen returns and he's healthy. But this is Jack Campbell after yet another win.
It's pretty awesome. You know, lots of words right now. It's been a long journey, and just to have their support, every single guy, it's crazy. It's a dream come true. something I worked very hard for. And, you know, there's not a day I don't thank the Lord for putting me here in Toronto with these amazing guys. And, you know, I don't want to forget my LA teammates and coaches there, because they got the ball rolling for me in the NHL. And without them, I wouldn't be here. But since I've been here, the team and the organization's been just amazing. And, you know, I still got a lot better. I can still keep getting a lot better. So that's all I'm focused on. And we're just trying to have as much fun and keep winning.
Too emotional, I say. Too emotional for the playoffs.
Needs to be under check.
Yeah, he just needs to dial it back a little bit.
You can't ride the highs and you can't ride the lows. You got to just stay right in the middle.
Can you imagine a Montreal-Toronto series?
God, no.
They haven't played in the playoffs since the 70s.
I wonder why. Montreal and Toronto. It feels like they're not good at the same time, those two teams.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, for most of the 80s, the Leafs were awful, yeah. And the Habs were still good into the 90s. But I really want to see this, and I want to see Montreal win, because I think that would be that. That's I got. I've said this before. There's two things that I want this year. I want the Flames to miss, and I want the Leafs to choke in the first round. And this goaltending storyline is going to be fascinating to watch. Kevin Woodley again is coming up at 7:20. We'll talk to Kev about the goaltending situation in Toronto, and we'll try to come up with ways that it'll go wrong for the Leafs instead of celebrating Jack Campbell like we have some class, because we don't. It's a Halford and Brough show. Sportsnet 650.